had my first three children. And then I hadn't worked in all these years, and I decided something happened. My father got killed in a wreck, and I just couldn't handle that very well. So my doctor recommended that I needed to get out of the house. My dad got killed the day we moved into this house. And he recommended that I get out of the house and do something. So I went job hunting. Never having worked, with no experience whatsoever, I could not find a job in my field. So I got a job working at Memorial Hospital in the operating room as a surgical technician. And ultimately, I went back to school. And now I'm a nurse anesthetist, but at the time I went to work, I was a surgical technician in the operating room.
Okay, I wanted to go back and talk some more about your college experience. Mm-hmm. Why did you select North Carolina A&T?
I got a scholarship there. Well, I take that back. I had four scholarships, but that was it was a full scholarship. And see, I could not have gone to school without a scholarship. My parents would not have been able to send me to, you're talking about people who were making $40 a week if they were making that much, you know. So it was purely based on the fact that I got the biggest scholarship from A&T.
What was A&T like when you first got there?
I thought it was so big. My daughter is an A&T graduate. And when I went back to A&T 20-some years later to take my child, the campus was triple the size it was when I was a student there. But I thought it was so big, but I think back about it, and I would not give anything for the experience of having gone, because I can remember all of a sudden, you know, you were just part of this great big student body, and I was free and away from home and could come as I wanted to and go within limits, because they had very strict limits for young ladies then. But then we thought they were very liberal, you know. You had to go everywhere you went in twos. If you left the college campus, you had to have parental permission to even come home for the weekend. You had to have parental permission, written permission, to come home for holidays and this type of thing. But we thought it was absolute freedom, you know.
What time period was
there? I went to A&T in the fall of 1958.
Was the Civil Rights Movement?
We were a part. I was a part of the original sit-ins at A&T.
Okay, wow. I guess we can talk. Before we get to that, mm-hmm. I want to ask you, what was the social life like?
Oh, the social life was great. We had did lots and lots of dating. I was very fortunate in as much as I think about, maybe 15 or 20 people from my graduating high school class went to A&T. And then there were like maybe that many more people who had graduated in the class immediately before me. And so I knew lots of people, knew lots of faces when I got there, and we just, you know, we had a good time. We did lots of socializing. Had friends who were on Bennett's campus who came over, you know, we went back and forth. So we did a lot of, it wasn't so much dating as it was just pure socializing, you know.
Did you listen to music?
We did. I had a record player, and I'm trying to think, I remember we laughed sometime about this record. I wore a hole in it. It was Ray Charles's. What is the name? I can't think of the name of it right now. But anyway, I remember I played it so it wore a hole in the record. But we listened to record. We had 45. I had a record player that played 45s. And we did a lot of listening to the record player and the radio, because that's about all we had to do.
Did you make friends that were other friends that weren't from Charlotte?
Yeah. Some of my best friends were from out of town. I remember I made this girl from Boca Raton, Florida. She and I were very good friends. Girl from Hickory, girl from New Bern, North Carolina. A guy from Asheville. We all got to be real close. In fact, I never roomed with anybody from Charlotte. My roommates were all from out of town. One was from Roxbury, North Carolina. One was from Ashburg, you know, like that. I never roomed with anybody from Charlotte.
Did you ever join any clubs or sororities?
Uh-huh. I joined Gamma Sigma Sigma, which is the sisters to the Kappas. Then, of course, I belong to the professional sorority on campus. But I'm not active in it now. I belong to the nursing sorority now, Chi Eta Phi.
What made you decide to join the sorority when you were in college?
I was approached for the Deltas and AKAs and whatever, but the Gammas were the charter members on that campus because that was the founding year of that sorority on that campus. And I just liked the idea of it was a service sorority, and we would go to L. Richardson Hospital on Saturdays and do volunteer work and this kind of thing. I just enjoyed doing that.
Did the other sororities and fraternities, did they figure prominently on the campus?
Mm-hmm. The Greeks were very prominent on campus. In fact, I kind of felt like they had better time than most other students did because periodically, all of the sororities and fraternities got together and did things, you know. And of course, the brothers would serenade the sisters at night, you know, the moonlight serenades. And I don't know if they still do that on college campuses now, but they did it when we were. You would hear them singing from blocks and blocks away, and they would come and serenade the girls' dorms at night. And they don't do that now. Well, they did, but you had a kind of, you know, you just kind of had a good time if you were belonged to a fraternity or a sorority.
Do you know if they had any hazing rituals back then, or?
I'm sure that they did, and I think now, I think back on our initiation, it wasn't hazing, but we did some things. They, you know, mentally they played with your mind, you know. More so than physically, I think it was like a thing, you play with their mind enough and make them think that they've done this. If they did, we never heard about it. I won't say that it didn't happen, I just will say we didn't know it.
Also wanted to ask, what were your classes like? Do you have any teachers you remember?
Mm-hmm. I can remember, I was a chemistry major, and I can remember going, my first chemistry class, my first quantitative chemistry class, I can remember going in and being given a little half of a beaker of a white powdered substance and being told that my entire grade for that quarter would be determined by me being able to tell the instructor what it was and how much of each element was in it at the end of the semester. And you spent the whole semester trying to find your chemical, and you dared not use but a little tiny bit. It had to last you all semester because you couldn't have any more. And so that was your entire class, you know. And she did lectures. She did lectures, but your grade was determined by that. She didn't give another exam the whole semester.
How did you meet your husband?
My husband and I met in high school. We met in high school. We started dating the year he was a senior and I was a junior.
Did he go to A&T?
No, my husband did not go to school. He was gonna go into he was gonna go into the Army. He and a friend had signed up to go into the Army on the buddy system that existed at that time, and his mother died the night before he was supposed to go in, and he got a deferment, and he had lots of younger brothers and sisters, so somebody had to be responsible for them, and so he did not go into service.
Okay, I guess we'll keep on with mm-hmm. this. When did you got married after school?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'll go back and mm-hmm. ask you about it. You said you were a member of the sit-ins. How did you get involved in that?
Well, it was like, you know, the first group went up there that first day, these guys went the first day. And then they came back and they organized everybody on campus, you know, we're gonna go back, and they told us what had happened and all this, and you know, it was so funny. Sometimes people have asked me, did you realize the significance? And we said no, because we had no idea that it would be as far reaching as it would have been and would have changed the course of history almost, you know. We just did it as something to do because we shopped up there all the time, and they're going to tell us we can't sit and eat, and we decided we were going to sit. And I can remember we went to, on the way uptown and on the way back, these white folk in the hotels were throwing water bombs down on us and whatever. But you know, it was a big lock with us. It was not something that any of us would have considered to have been as serious as it was.
Were you ever afraid when you were there?
Mm-mm. I wasn't afraid, but my mother was scared to death at home.
What did she say?
She told me to come home. She told me to come. I had to come home. My mother made me come home. A lot of, lots of students, parents made them come home because they were afraid we were going to go to jail.
How long did you stay at home?
Oh, I just came home that weekend and stayed home that weekend and then I went back.
Did you continue with it?
Mm-hmm. But I didn't let my mother know I was continuing with it. Actually, what happened was the group became more closely organized after that first week. You know, first it was kind of a loose-knit thing, you know. And then they really got down to business, organized and set some objectives, purposes and objectives and whatever. And then start bringing in the Greensboro community, the Black Greensboro community. And they started boycotting, you know, the major stores and whatever, and stopped buying from people who were segregating them. So it really did become a real hardcore organized thing.
Did you have any help from older adults and things like that?
In Greensboro. Mm-hmm. Later on in it, like say a week or so after the original sit down, the original stuff was all college student. No adults were involved in it.
Why they decided just to do that day?
I don't know. You know, I did hear, and over the years I have forgotten why they just decided to do that on that particular day. I guess it might have been one of those Rosa Parks things, you know, just got tired that day and decided we're going to do this, you know.
Do you have any, did you actually do the sit-ins?
Yeah, we went and sat in.
What happened?
And they came in and we sat in the floor, and they came in and threatened to beat us, and they threatened to throw us in jail, and we just sat there and looked at them, and finally I think they decided, well, they're not going to get up, so we're not going to bother them, you know, because by then the TV cameras had gotten in on us, and I think that they realized that they're going to get a whole lot of coverage and publicity out of this if we bother them. And they didn't, now they did not bother us. We sat there. They didn't serve us. They closed the counter down. They did not serve us, but they didn't bother us.
How long did you participate?
Well, we did it all that week. We did it. My mother made me come home towards the end of the week. But then we went back, and I think after then we didn't sit in anymore. But there were other students who did because it was been done on, you know, on a rotating basis. I never went back and sat in anymore, but we did pamphlets in the neighborhoods and whatever. We did that.
Were you ever arrested?
Mm-mm.
How did you balance your schoolwork? That would seem to be quite ordinary compared
Well, you just decided what class was most important and cut a class, you know.
What did your teachers think about it?
Some of the teachers were 100% for us, and some of them were scared to death and 100% against it. And the chancellor of the school at the time was middle of the road, you know. He could not very well denounce it, but then he didn't give you a lot of support either.
Well, your young sisters and brother, what did they think about you?
They were home, and I don't really know what they thought about it.
They didn't hear what.
No, because now, remember, we didn't have a telephone, so I couldn't communicate with them that much, you know. And I think that it didn't really, at the time, it didn't really register with them either, what was going on.
Was your friend, was he at Charlotte then?
Who?
Your future husband.
He was here in Charlotte, uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did he know about what was happening?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But like I said, I don't really think that any of them really thought that this thing was that significant. I think they saw it mostly as a college student's lark, you know, nothing real big. But then it spread to Charlotte. And then I think that's when they began to see that this thing does have some merit to it, because the same thing came to Charlotte, too.
Did you ever have to speak to people? And did you go out in the community and talk to people?
No, we put out flyers and we kind of knocked on doors and talked to people. But as far as public speaking, no.
So what did you, how long did you participate throughout college?
Until I left. And then we stopped going downtown to shop.
Where did you go buy your clothes?
Well, see, we were doing a lot. You know, we didn't have a lot of money, so we did a lot of shopping at Woolworths and Belk's and places like that downtown. But we stopped shopping. We, you know, they organized the boycotts, and we just stopped going.
How did you get the things you needed
then? Well, basically the things you had to have, like paper and pencils and stuff like that, they sold it on campus. So you could always buy it at the campus store.
Did you buy your clothes?
Now, my mother made most of my clothes, and then I had an aunt who was in Spain at the time, and she would send me clothes and whatever, so I didn't really need to buy any clothes, but I'd buy stuff, but then I stopped buying anything.
What was the reaction of the stores?
Well, I think the stores at first thought that this thing would not last, and I think that at first they didn't give it a lot of thought. They thought that, you know, fly by night and they'll be gone and, you know, it'll all be over. But then after it was sustained for so long, I think they realized they had lost so much money. Because let's face it, a lot of their charge account business was black folk. A lot of their credit account, layaway account business were black folk. And when the black folks stopped buying, they lost tremendous amounts of money.
Okay, I guess, is there something else you'd like to add about the... Okay, I'll go on to your... did you get married right after graduation?
No, I got married maybe a year after.
Oh, okay, so what did you do after graduation?
Nothing. I really didn't. I came home. My youngest sister was in her last year of high school, and I basically kept house for my daddy, and didn't really work.
Were you looking for jobs? Or you just wanted
I cannot to- really say that I actively looked for a job because I really didn't.
So when you got married a year after, mm-hmm. What was your wedding?
I didn't have a wedding. We just went to York, South Carolina and got married, and my husband's sister gave us a reception in her house. It was more of a reception dinner. We didn't have a wedding. We couldn't afford one.
Why did you go to York?
It was just the place to go. Lots of people used to get married in York, South Carolina. It was like you could get a license, go down and get married that day.
Oh, okay.
See, there was no waiting period. It was just a dinner. It was family, mostly my husband's family, my sister's. She had cooked a big dinner, and it was like wasn't like a reception food. This was like soul food, like potato salad and chicken and barbecued ribs and that kind of stuff. We was out in her backyard, and we just had a big dinner. Just sat around and ate and talked and whatever, and that's all.
Where did you live after?
We had an apartment over on North Brevard Street. And we stayed there for probably a year, and then we moved out of that apartment with my husband's father, because we were trying to get into the government projects in the Southside homes. And we stayed there until we saved enough money to buy a house.
What did your husband do?
At the time we got married. Now, you know what, I'm trying to remember, where was he? I think he worked at Standard Crankshaft at the time we got married.
What neighborhood is that?
That was still First Ward.
Oh, okay.
That was still First Ward. On the edges of First Ward, it was still First Ward.
And when you moved to live with his father, what neighborhood is that?
Still First Ward.
Okay.
Still First Ward.
Okay, so you were, as a young, you didn't start working then?
No, I did not start working until 1969.
Did you continue with your civil rights activities?
Yeah, I did. I stayed very active in politics and in the civil rights movement. And when I don't know if anybody has told you about George Leak or not. He was very active. He ran for mayor of Charlotte at one time. He's a very active minister of Little Rock Amy Zion Church. He organized a march of the Black Panthers and the black folk in Charlotte through the streets of Charlotte. Now we were right out there in the middle of it with him, you know. Yeah, did stay very active in that. In fact, I'm nothing like as active now as I once was.
What did your husband think about that?
Well, he just kind of always, he supports me. He doesn't get that much involved, but he does support me. If I want to get involved, you know, he's behind me 100%.
How long were you married before you started? started having your children?
Had the first one almost a year afterwards.
Okay.
almost a year after we were married. In fact, I think it might have been a little less than a year she was born. And then one, two, three. It was like the first three children were born, one right behind the other one. Then there's 4 years between the next one, 4 years between the other one.
Did you have a lot of help? My grandmothers
were still in their health and strength at the time, and of course, if I needed somebody to keep the children, they were always there. My sister would keep the children for me and whatever, so.
Did you ever feel like you had to work for financial reasons?
That's not what I first went to work for. Like I said, I first went to work because I needed to get out of the house. But then we decided that in order for them to be able to go to college, we really would need two incomes. And so this was when I decided to go back to school.
Did your husband not mind you not working?
No, he didn't. He did not mind because he would rather have I had been here with the children. And it was my decision, you know, to go and find a job. But then when I did find a job now, I decided that if I was going to work, then I needed to really have a job where I made enough money to do something with. So he paid for me to go back to school.
Mm-hmm. How, aside from your civil rights work, what other organizations were you involved in?
Well, I'm a very active church person. I belong to several organizations at church, and of course, like I said, I belong to the Chi Eta Phi Nursing Sorority. And I'm an Eastern Star. And right now, I'm supervisor of the Gleaners for my particular chapter. And that's enough.
Back then in the 60s, were you involved in any other organizations during that time?
Not really, other than church. Mm-hmm. Other than church, not really.
Did you, after you had your children, were they involved in any organizations or groups?
Now, my oldest son belongs to the Kappas. My children are probably more church orientated than anything else. They are active church people, but other than church and jobs, I don't think they are really.
And did you attend the same church as you did prior? You said you were Amy's. What church?
Mm-hmm. I'm still Amy. I still belong to Little Rock. Uh huh.
What was that church service church like?
Oh, look, it was like the center of the community at the time. When I was growing up in First Ward, there were, maybe eight black churches in the community. Mount Sinai was in First Ward, Little Rock, Gilfield, Mount Moriah. All those churches were concentrating in that area over there. And everything practically was centered in a church. You know, all of your activities, all of the everything was either at the church or at the school.
And did you make a lot of friends at church?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Lasting friends down through the years, you know, from church. You kind of I often tell people I grew up knowing almost everybody from Trade Street to 12th Street and from Long Street to Brevard Street. Because of the fact that everything was school or church orientated, you knew all of these people, you know.
What kind of things as a young married couple did you and your husband do for fun?
We laugh about it now. We didn't have any money, and we'd take the kids on rides and long rides through the city. We'd fix a picnic and go to Freedom Park, or we'd go out to the lake and have a picnic. The young men would all play basketball on Sunday evenings. We'd go over to Lincoln Heights School and sit on the grass and watch our husbands play basketball and take picnic supper and let the kids eat supper out there on the grass. The types of things we did because we didn't have any money. We played a lot of cards.
What kind of game?
We played bid whist. And we played a lot of spades, but mostly bid whist.
Do you ever any bridge clubs?
I can play bridge. I've never been in a bridge club, but I can play bridge and pinochle, but I don't belong to a bridge club or a pinochle club.
Were you any of the women's associations?
No, other than, like I said, other than the church organizations that I belong to, and what I already told you, no.
When did you join Eastern Star?
Oh, gosh, I can't remember how long ago it's been. I've been in Eastern Star. Probably, maybe 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay. How are their members selected?
Up until about 2 years ago, you had to be related to a Mason.
Oh, okay.
Either the mother, wife, daughter, of a Mason. But a couple of years ago, they relaxed the restrictions, and any woman could come in. But then that's no longer in. Now it has. You have to be related to a Mason or an Eastern Star.
Oh, okay. Was your husband a Mason?
Mm-hmm. My husband's been a Mason for upteen years.
What kind of did he ever describe any of those experiences? What did he do as a part of that organization?
As a Mason, they do a lot of community things. I went last Saturday. I spent last Saturday up in Oxford, North Carolina, at the Central Children's Home. The Masons sponsor that. When I say sponsor, they put a lot of money, like $100,000 a year, into that children's home up there. It's an orphanage, is what it is. They do a lot of helping to feed the hungry in Charlotte. They work with boys groups, and like I said, I'm working right now for girls group. Our girls are called Gleaners, the boys are called Knights. You know, that kind of thing. They do a lot of that kind of work. It's not always known what they do, but they do a lot of it.
How were members selected for that?
I think that basically any man who wants to become a Mason can become a Mason. They are investigated. They cannot have police records. They have to belong to church. They have to be a registered voter and this type of thing. They have to go through the process and be voted in, but any man can apply and become a Mason.
Okay. Was he ever in any other organization?
My husband he's also a very church-orientated person. Now, he belongs to a men's group at church called the Men of Varick. And they do a lot of work with young boys.
Okay. I guess let's go back to your civil rights activities. What other different types of things did you do after you were married with them?
Well, basically, I didn't do a whole lot except raise children. I really didn't do a whole lot but raise children during that time, you know. And then I went to work, and that's about it.
What kind of values did you try to instill in your children?
I tried really to do the same things that my parents did with us, with, you know, give them some good moral things to hang on to and hold on to. And I've often told them, you know, you've been taught right and wrong, and so it's up to you what you do with it. And I'm very proud of them. I can look at them as young adults and see a lot of what they've been taught. And they stick to it, you know.
Mm-hmm. You said you first started working in 1969. What was that like returning to
it? It was, I don't know, it was a wonderful world of work out there. You know, here I was, I had spent all these years with little people at home. And all of a sudden I was out there with adults. I think back on it now, and it was quite an experience. I went to work at Memorial Hospital, which is Carolina's medical center now, and there was one black person in the operating room who was not identifiable as a black person because I didn't realize she was black. And they were getting Hill-Burton money, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with the Hill-Burton Act, it's federal money to build hospitals and whatever, and expansions of hospitals. But anyway, they had to integrate certain areas of that hospital that had not heretofore been integrated. And it was explained to me, the person who was the supervisor explained to me what was what, and that basically I would be integrating that place. And so that's what I went in there like that, and of course, it was not always easy because there was working with older white doctors who were having integration pushed down their throats. And so it, you know, it took a few years for them to get used to me being there, and then gradually they hired more black people.
Were you nervous about this role you had to play?
Well, I don't know. I think back on it now. If I had it all over, if I had to do it all over again, I don't know if I would. I really don't. I enjoyed the experience, and I wouldn't take anything for it. And being as outspoken as I was, I think that's the only way I got through it. Was,
do you remember any specific experience?
Oh, there were doctors who, there were white doctors who would turn their back to me and put their hand out for insurance and never look at me, you know, that this type of thing.
What did you do about
this? Oh, I just act like they weren't there too.
Mm-hmm. Did you have anybody you could address?
I could talk. The supervisor, who was white, I could always talk to her because she understood what was going on. She explained to me to start off with what was going on, and I could always go to her when I had problems. And then gradually, like I said, they hired some more black people, and therefore I had somebody I could identify with, you know.
You said that there was another black person there, but you couldn't, you mm-hmm. know, was it a woman?
Mm-hmm.
Did she ever make any overtures towards you?
Or? Yeah, she did. She was always very friendly with me, but I did not realize why, because see, I could not look at her and know that she was black.
Mm-hmm. So did she face any problems? Face
not as much as I did, because see, they didn't know that she was, she wasn't passing herself off. Oh, she wasn't passing as white. It was just that most folk could not look at her and know that she was white, so they treated her differently.
Do you think she got, did they, her supervisors know that she was black?
Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she came from the old Good Samaritan Hospital.
Oh, okay, okay. So then you worked there, and then you went back to school again?
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience?
Well, I worked while I was in school. I still stayed and worked
okay.
I was in school. But I went to Central Piedmont's nursing school. And of course, it was fully integrated at the time, and I guess it was, you know, as an adult student, I didn't have time to really be involved in a whole lot going on because I had a family at home, I had a job to go to, so it was like go to school, go to work, come home.
How old were your children at this time?
The first three of them were already in elementary school, and I had Deborah, who was my youngest child, and then I got pregnant when I was in nursing school, and I had a baby while I was in nursing school. So that's the ages that they were.
Okay, and then you became a nurse anesthesiologist.
A nurse anesthetist. Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. That's all right.
What was that experience?
Well, see now, remember I was already a part of this operating room, and the nurse anesthesia school that I went to was at Memorial Hospital. So it was just a transition from the operating room staff to the anesthesia school.
What was it like being back in school after?
Well, it was not easy, but then, you know, you set your goals and you just work real hard on it, you know.
How did you find time for study?
My husband's an awfully good person. He did a lot of housework, cooking, getting the children to the nursery or home and whatever so that I could study.
So that's what your current
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you
I'm thinking retirement now.
Oh. Did you notice the change in the effects of the civil rights movement in the workplace since you've been there?
Yeah, very much so, very much so. I currently work for a group of plastic surgeons. And I do the anesthesia for the office surgery. And there's one of the scrub nurses is black. Now remember, plastic surgery is a white world. Because let's face it, very few black folk have plastic surgery. 30 years ago, I could not have worked at that office. 30 years ago, I could not have been a nurse anesthetist because I could not have gone to that anesthesia school. Because the black folk who were doing anesthesia 30 years ago were people who had on-the-job training. Some doctor told them how to do it, you know. They had no didactic, they had no real feel for the work. Times have very much so changed.
How would you think your children's education experiences differ from yours?
I have a son who is an engineer who travels all over the world. he got his education at North Carolina State, which he could not have done in an integrated, in a segregated North Carolina. There's no way.
I think I'm trying to think of something else. We've gone so fast. You're a lot younger than our other.
Yeah, but you don't know how old I really am.
Okay, I think, how did your husband, you said your husband was really helpful. How did he adjust to you when you really started working for
him? Well, like I say, now when I was trying to go to school and whatever, we would do the cleaning on the weekends. We would do the washing, together. It was a matter of me getting up and going to work. I had to be at work at 6:45, so that meant he had to get the kids up and get them to the nursery. A lot of times if I worked in the afternoon, he'd have to get them home and get them supper and that type of thing, and he did all of it,
How did your children react when they used to
be in the nursery? They thought it was fun to be in the nursery. It ever really bothered them. I had been a housewife and had been home with them all the time. But I think basically they probably felt a freedom. All of a sudden they with these other little kids all day long playing, and I think they liked it.
I just wanted to ask you one more question. Mm-hmm. Who were some of the role models in your life?
Oh, let's see. I think that when I was a child growing up, my mother and my aunt were real role models for me. I had an aunt who was a beautician, and she decided she was about 30 years old, she'd go to nursing school, and she did, and I've always admired her for that. My mother, like I said, my mother was a very strong woman, and I always looked up to her. When I was in high school, I had a teacher named Mrs. Adams, who was an algebra teacher, and I thought that there was nobody like Mrs. Adams, that's just the way I felt about her. Church, I think there was a lady called Margie Morris. Miss Morris was to me what a Christian woman should be, and she had no children of her own, but yet she was always among children, she was always doing something. She was always giving. Even after I got married and had children, she was always giving my children, people like this. I said, my superheroes are not people who are in the headlines. They're people who I've had personal contact with and who've meant something or made some changes in my life. And I guess that, to me, those are the people that I've really looked up to.
And one more. You've lived in Charlotte all your life.
Basically, I lived in Boston for a year.
Oh, okay.
I was a teenager.
Oh, see, I knew I did something. What was that experience like?
It was a brand new experience for me. All of a sudden, I was up in Boston, and nothing was segregated. Or so I thought, it was a freedom I hadn't had before. I could get on the trolley or the bus or the subway and sit where I wanted to. I could go in any store and sit down and eat or whatever, What happened was I went to Boston to visit for the summer, and there was a hurricane. I can't remember the exact name of that particular hurricane because it was in 1950, in the late 1950s. But anyway, there was polio epidemic, and we were quarantined, and I could not come home to come to school that
summer. Who did you visit?
My mother's sister.
Oh, okay.
And so I had to stay. But I'd get on the trolley and the bus, and I'd go. I did all of the things that people that live in the city don't do, like all of the, like the House of the Seven Gables and the all of this. I went to see everything, I'd catch the trolley, the bus, and I'd go see everything that was to be seen, the historical things, because you had that freedom to go do it.
When you mean a quarantine, that means they had a quarantine in Charlotte?
No, in Boston.
Oh.
You could not. Nobody was allowed to leave the city because of the polio epidemic. What happened was the hurricane had, I don't know the particulars of it, but there were large pools of water standing everywhere, and evidently something happened, and folk were just, because my aunt had, see what happened was my aunt had polio symptoms and had to be hospitalized, so the whole house was quarantined.
And did you attend school there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was that?
It was, like I say, it was an integrated school. I found that I probably was maybe a year behind the students in that school. But I basically think I caught up with them, you know. So then when I came here, it put me a little bit ahead of everybody else. But it was a brand new experience because I'd gone to segregated schools all my life, and all of a sudden here I was in an integrated school.
What did you think about your fellow white classmates?
It was like, you know, I didn't feel any racism. And I tell you why, because the community that we lived in was basically integrated. So all of these kids you were going to school with, you lived with.
Did you make friends with them and play mm-hmm. and hang
yep.
out after school?
Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't do a lot of hanging out after school. I came in, and I had chores to do, just like I did at home. And my uncle, his sister had a large family. I think there must have been about 15 kids in their family. And they lived right down the street, so I did most of my socializing with them. Mm-hmm.
Did you have white teachers?
Mm-hmm. You had white and black teachers,
what
yeah.
What was that experience like?
It was, like I said, I did not feel a sense of racism in that particular school. Now, I won't say, I've since learned that a lot of times that kind of stuff is hidden, you know, and that it's there, but I didn't feel it as a child in that particular situation.
Did you feel a responsibility to do well because you were black?
No, I didn't feel a responsibility to do well because I was black. I felt a responsibility to do well because I'd had that, you know, indoctrinated into me all my life to do well.
What kind of things? Did you attend church there?
Mm-hmm. My aunt belonged to the CME church, and I sang in the choir when I was there.
Was there a difference between your church at home and that?
Not a whole lot, because the CME church, the AME church, and the AME Zion church are basically all Methodist churches. So it wasn't a lot of difference in the church. It was like, you know, their singing probably was a little bit more gospel music than the church I was used to at home, but basically it wasn't a big difference in them.
What did you do with your friend? You said you was your cousin.
We did things like we went skating in the wintertime, learned ice skate. You know, we went skating. We'd go to the amusement parks, movies, that kind of thing.
And what was your experience when you came back?
Well, you know, you come back, and all these things, and we went to the beach a lot because, you know, Boston is a coastal town. And then I came home, and then there are these same things to do at home that you've always done, you know. So you're limited.
Did you feel any resentment coming back and seeing the signs and everything?
No, I didn't. I really didn't feel any resentment. No more like to say that. When things like that happen and it occurred to you that, you know, hey, this is something's wrong with this picture. I came back, the year that I came back to school was the year that they wanted to integrate Old Central High School. And my mother was approached to have me to go to, as one of the people to go to integrate the school, and she said no.
Why do you think she made that decision?
I don't know. I don't know whether she had foresight and could see that it was going to be a troublesome picture or what, but she said no, and so that I was out of that.
Was there any ramifications to her decision?
She never explained to me why she said no, but she did tell them no. And I mean, she said it, and you know, and she told me what had transpired, and that she had told them no.
Did you want to go?
No, I did. I really didn't, because it would have meant I would have been separated from all of my friends. You're going into a white school where you know that they don't want you there, and there you are by yourself. And I really didn't. I wasn't champing at the bit to do that. If my mother had said do it, I probably would have, you know, I would have gone on and done it. But she said no, and I didn't have that. You know, I didn't have to worry about whether I would or wouldn't.
Was she criticized by the people in the community?
I don't think so, because I think it was a private thing. I don't think that very few folk in the community knew that she had been approached about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody, we all went to Second Ward. Second Ward wasn't closed down until in the 1960s.
Did you ever have any friends from West Charlotte?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had friends from West Charlotte. There was a great rivalry between the two schools, but by the same token, we had lots of, you know, there were lots of people that you knew from West Charlotte. We graduated together. The two high schools always had commencement together.
Okay. I guess, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I've been trying to think of something. Okay, I think that is all my questions. So.
That's all right.
So, I'll write notes about it. Okay. What dates, year did you work there?
I went to work for them, like I said, in 1965, and I worked a year and a half.
Okay. I'll go back and write that.
Yeah.
Goodness, I would have to take all part. Okay, and do you want to list any other?
Okay, and then I worked at Charlotte Memorial Hospital in the operating room as a surge tech from about 69, no, it had to be 68. Through 69.
Okay.
And then I went to nursing school and I worked there as a nurse for 2 years. And I'm not sure what the time frame was, because I went down, I must have worked up until 76 as an RN.
Okay.
I graduated from nursing school in 73, so I must have worked from 73 to 76. And then I went to anesthesia school from 76 to 78. And I worked at Roanne Memorial Hospital.